Hey everyone, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Micro Brands. All right, so on today's show, I'm really excited. I can't wait to talk to branding expert and former coup of Snow. I don't know if you've heard of Snow before. If you haven't, check them out. It's incredible. Everything that I preach and that I love went into Snow. So check it out. And Brenda Ruby is the person responsible for that. So on this episode, Brenda's going to be sharing how she built from scratch a 9-figure company. She also developed award-winning products and built partnership with A-list celebrities such as the Kardashians, and also helped launch products into major retail chains like Target. But before we get into that, we are broadcasting to you live on Facebook, LinkedIn, and what's the other one? YouTube. Had to look there for a second. I knew there was another one. If you're watching on a replay, you can just always skip ahead. And for those watching on my profile page, you can always skip over to Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy, and get the whole episode, clips, and all sorts of other content. Where are you, Kelsey?
Hello, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, sir.
Looks like we have Dawin joining us already. Hello, Dawin. How are you?
All right.
Welcome everyone. How is your Friday going? Let us know what you're doing this weekend. Ooh, Lewis from Berlin is joining us.
All right, hello, Lewis.
Welcome. Let us know what you're doing, where you're watching from. It's always great to see. So getting to the show, if you're new to the show, you can catch all of the episodes on YouTube. You can find the full episodes, short clips, anything on the YouTube channel. Just search Lunch with Norm or Norman Farrar and you'll find it. Simon.
Hey, Simon.
Brexit land. Okay. And we are a podcast, of course, so you can listen to us on Spotify and Apple. And yeah, before you do anything, hit that like button, share this video, get the word out. And we do have a couple of great prizes today, which I think you guys will be super excited about.
Okay.
We got Usman joining us.
The big winner from the other day.
Yes. Okay.
Awesome. I hope you're enjoying that, by the way, Usman.
Bronwyn's joining us. Okay, so let's get right to it.
Australia. Wow. Okay. So, hey, before we get to that, I do want to talk about my other podcast. I don't do this a lot, but I do want to talk about it because I've got a really incredible, well, there's two people that are going to be on it. So check out I Know This Guy this week, and you're going to see two incredible people. The one person is a Sherpa. He comes from Nepal. His name is Pemba Sherpa and Dave McKean, and they own a company called Sherpa Chai. Now, it's not a plug for their Sherpa Chai tea, but what it is a really incredible human being. A guy that was a guide in the mountains in the Himalayas. He left a village, a very poor village. He built a suspension bridge to help people because he saw one of his friends die at an early age and he couldn't save him. So he went back to the village, built a suspension bridge so kids could also get to school safer and cut a 3-hour walk one way down to 45 minutes. Built hydroelectricity to come into the camp, adopted people, brought people over. The people in the company kind of bought into his culture. And these are all Sherpas, but they started adopting people and little children from overseas may have lost their parents. It's an incredible podcast. I love it. It's just one of those that, you know, you think about and it's just a really incredible company that have done incredible things and just a really nice guy. So check it out. Again, I don't usually promote that podcast on this podcast, but I liked it. Okay. So to get this going, I know I've talked a little bit here. I'm always long-winded. If you have any comments, just throw them over into the right-hand side. and sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy the show. So now I'm super excited. Brenda, where are you?
Right here. Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Beautiful Friday in Arizona. It is the best winters that we have.
Oh, in Arizona. Oh, my
Arizona,
gosh.
Arizona, yeah.
I'm looking at a pile of snow, no pun intended. A pile of snow.
Okay. Well, I'm about to bring a blizzard today with all the knowledge I got from snow. So we're in the same boat.
I can't wait. You know, we were just talking before the call, but I can't believe the amount of people that don't take that extra step, even if they can't. Like, look, snow is an incredible home run. It took a lot to do that. But the average Amazon seller or person bringing a product into the marketplace, if they only took the time to just research, go to a couple of focus groups, or just talk to the manufacturer or packaging company about what they can do differently. And you did it. And yes, you grew a company from zero to nine figures.
That's absolutely right. And like you said, people don't take the time, but guess what? It doesn't take a lot of time. It takes a little innovative and to look outside of your competitor, your industry, to really stand out. And that's exactly what I want to tell you guys how to do.
Great. So before we get into it, let's talk a little bit about you and your background.
Yes. So how did I get here? The short version, I'm a sibling of five, so five total children, a single mother. So I say that background because of the work ethic that was instilled in me very young. Super studious, academic, went to high school, graduated top 2% of my school, then went to a university here at ASU, graduated in 3 years. I wanted to get out. I wanted to start working because in my household, we help each other and it was for my mom, right? I wanted to help her out and say, hey, all of the hard work that you did, I want to pay it off. So I went into corporate America. I graduated with an accounting degree, very analytical. That was very short-lived because I ended up wanting more impact. And I was also really creative, hence the packaging, the whole innovative side of me. So I left corporate America. It was an amazing structural experience that I got. And then I went into a marketing agency. And that's exactly where all my innovative and creative started, helping entrepreneurs. I have a big heart. And I love the entrepreneur that just goes in the trenches and figures it out. And I love to help them out and skip that learning curve and be more innovative and in marketing. So I really fell in love with that. And that's where me and my partner, Josh, started implementing with e-commerce internally, as every agency, marketing agency does. And then that's where Snow was built. And from the very beginning, I mean, everybody wears multiple hats at the very beginning. And so that's where I learned how to talk to customers. So I handle all the customer experience from starting just on email, just Gmail, straight away on my phone. I had a template on my notes and I had exactly how I wanted to talk to customers. And this is important. Why I say this is because I knew the customer from the very beginning from starting this. So when I talked to them, I knew exactly what they wanted. And so then I ended up not knowing anything about supply chain. I just started producing the products, the packaging. I understood what the customer wanted and how they wanted to feel. And so I did everything from, customer experience, fulfillment, marketing strategy, supply chain, the warehouse. I manage teams. I manage multiple teams remotely and in person, and then going from garage to a warehouse and then knocking down walls and then working with influencers and celebrities. And I mean, it was so intimidating for me, but I grew so, so much in that just short span of 5 years, especially with Snow, the trajectory of the growth that it had so quickly. I always worked like 12, 16 hour days, and it was such a passion for me to be in that company.
I'm later on going to be talking to you about hyper growth and how you handled that. But before I get to it, and please remind me, because I'm an old guy, I forget these things. But anyways, when you started to look at Snow, I guess you had to, you came up, you did your product research, you did competitive analysis. But before you could package, like, your packaging did it all. I love it. But you also had an incredible product. So you had to go out and find that those incredible ingredients. And how did you go about doing that? How did you do your competitive analysis to find this incredible product that you knew would take off?
Yes. So to begin with, I want to tell everybody, especially where they're at, be patient, because Snow didn't start with amazing packaging. And now looking back at it, I want to almost throw up, but it was the slow, affordable growth steps that you take along the way. I mean, I wouldn't suggest just go in and buy, spend a lot of money on packaging. Just do it very strategically. So the way I did it at the beginning, it's, make sure the product is the best. That's a no-brainer. For us, it was developing the best product out there, so it actually works and speaks for itself. And then slowly but surely, I added and invested more into the packaging. And the way I did it, I knew that if I looked to my competitors, it would be a slow growth and like standing out. So I looked outside of my competitor industry. And so I knew Snow wanted it to become a beauty company. I mean, it started as a teeth whining, but it started as Snow Teeth Whining. And now we evolved to just Snow, because Snow, it's the umbrella to now a tech, to now a beauty industry. And so what I did, I literally walked into, so at the beginning I said, who is my customer? So knowing your customer 100%. It's almost like dating. I need to know my customer, what they like, where they're at. And so I knew my customer was the high-end women who loves to spend a lot of money. And I say, where do they shop? Where do they go? What do they enjoy? What do they like? And so that was Saks Fifth Avenue. That was Bloomingdale's. That was these Nordstrom. So I went in to all these stores physically, touched the product. How does it feel? How does it smell? What do they have? Why are these brands that have been around for hundreds of years have this loyal cult following? And so that was me stepping outside of the industry. And so I saw, for example, La Mer, which is $120 for less than an ounce for an eye cream. I was like, this is such a strong brand that they build. How can I almost duplicate it and make it my own? And so that's how I developed the lip balm. I was like, I made the lip balm look like an eye cream. And then I developed this really nice applicator. And it's also the wording that you use. And I love to show and tell. So this is the applicator that I developed that I saw. And then what I said is, I want to make sure that it's better. So I saw it and I made it better. It feels really heavy. So for when I create packaging, I want to make sure I'm looking at all of the senses of people, that how are they going to experience it at the very beginning. So I did very detailed as well. You want to make sure it's detailed. So there's the branding of it. And then it's a different applicator. So it's not only an applicator for the lip balm, but it's also acts as almost like the rollers that we see. It's cold. You can roll it onto your eyes. So when I develop packaging, I want to make sure it's useful. I want to make sure that we're not only spending money to spend money so it looks good. Make sure everything that you come out delivers value and that it's useful. This one can be used for anything. And guess what? It's free to the customer. So they almost feel like they're stealing from the company. That's the exact feeling I'd love to tell. And so they're like, oh my God, the buyer's remorse is gone, because they feel like they got so much value.
But even that applicator, so if you think of lip balm, you don't think of that applicator. So just seeing it, and I've seen testimonials. So there, Snow went out and did these great testimonial videos out on the street somewhere, and people are seeing it for the first time. And you can see that customer experience just, oh, I want it. Like the people that were doing the testimonials for the first time wanted the product. And why? It was so unique. And even the packaging within the packaging, so that applicator comes in a really nice package as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, super soft. It stands out, the gloss, everything. I mean, I one of my characteristics is being super detail oriented. And so this took multiple reiterations, again, working with the supplier, getting samples, saying like, no, this this imprint would fall off at the beginning. And I went through multiple reiterations. The bag itself, like there's actually a little holder that you go into it. So then you can take it. I take this in my purse. And so every single detail matters. And then that communication with the supplier, that extra detail goes a long way, because what is that going to give you? An amazing review, a recommendation to their friends, and the buyer's remorse goes away. And then the value that they receive, they just want to keep investing in your company.
So you built out a buyer persona. You got to know your demographic extremely well. Then you have these ingredients that make it the best. So almost like Neil Patel says about writing a blog article, if it's not the best, don't even publish. It's the same thing here. If your ingredients aren't the best, why even bother? Then after that, what was your next step?
So then and listening to the customer, again, customer trick. For the extra ingredients, I wrote down every single ingredient from the best product out there, from Sephora, from Nordstrom, from an e-commerce brand, from a long-lasting brand. So then I had an Excel sheet, literally an Excel sheet is like all of the best top-rated products that I want to create. Then I cross-multiply of the exact ingredients that they're creating, and then I make a little twist and an innovative to make it ours. So for example, the lip, I added peppermint and lavender. Why? Because I wanted that soothing, and the lip balm is close to your nose. So that lavender, you're going to get that smell again, and it smells great. I haven't heard of it, so that's why I cross created it. And then obviously talked to a scientist supplier to see if they can create it. Got different samples to see if it feels right. Is it too sticky? Is it too, does it actually feel like a lip balm? And so after that, then we put it out, and I was really quick with putting out products because I wanted that feedback. Again, I wanted to listen to the customer, and I wanted to see what they were saying. And even you can even build down your email list or a Facebook Messenger. Hey, I saw that you purchased the lip balm. What's your experience with it? And so listening to the customer and reiterating, making it better, and came out with the best product out there.
Did you ever buy it yourself?
Like just get. Of course, I always have it.
Yeah, and I'm talking about to get the customer experience.
Yes, and I would send it to my friends that did not want to hold back on, you know, that friend that will tell you the truth even though you don't want to hear it. I shipped it exactly how I shipped it to the customer and say, tell me your exact reaction, and please videotape yourself so I can see it. Try it on, put it on your sink, and tell me after a week, how does it feel on your lips?
You know, one thing you said right at the beginning that is so important is that you have a good product, but you don't have to wait around until you have the perfect packaging. You can release something, and then on your next order, you can take a look at your reviews. You can take a look at your competitions, and you can always upgrade. You can either, you know, create the bottle or create an outer package or an insert, but you can always be improving on it. But it doesn't have to. Don't hold back because you can't get the perfect packaging round one. And you might not think, and it's so important. I'm sure you've experienced this too. Is that you have to have others input. So many times I think I've nailed it on a package or a design only to find out that my choice was the worst. Everybody else thought choice A, B, or C. I liked D. So using a focus group like a PicFoo or like Usability Hub, those are things that are very important, but don't hold back. And you nailed it by, yeah, it wasn't the perfect packaging, you know, at the beginning.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how you got it out there. So you've developed it, you've tested it out, you sent it out to your friends. Now, what was the next step for you in the growth?
So we definitely had our hero product, and I always tell my entrepreneurs, come out with the best product, the hero product, and then expand into what makes sense for your customers. He's asking what else can they benefit from in what they're already loyal to, because after you come with something, they're loyal to whatever you're going to come, that loyalty is there. So after the teeth whining and it was the best, then doing the research and development for all these extra products, again, very great upsells because we're at $150 teeth whitening, and now the lip balm at $18.22 makes sense because it's less and it's an upsell and it goes perfectly. So then it was just coming out with it. It was this huge excitement on email and all our loyal following on social and coming out with it. And sometimes we would do a freebie and give it out for free, just again, testing it. And it was a hit and people loved it. And we also added it to the steps. So people love steps, especially in the beauty industry, especially like, oh, you need to do step one, step two, and feel that they miss out on step two, that they're not going to get the outcome. And so we added the lip balm as added before you do your teeth whitening process because your lips get dry. And that's also what I found out. I haven't seen any other teeth whitening system that has a lip balm because for me, when I was doing the application, my lips would get dry. And again, going through your customer reviews and saying what happens during that process or what are they complaining? And so they were complaining that their lips would get dry. And so that was how the lip balm was born. So we went to the process, how to whiten your teeth. You put on that lip balm before and then you whiten. And so now it's part of a process. Now they can't go without it. And honestly, it was really heartwarming to know for people to point out the exact same things that I worked so hard to develop. And when people said, oh, the lavender smells really nice, or like the applicator is just so easily, I can easily use it. Now I'm using it for my under eyes before my beauty routine at night. And so those are the things that I'm really grateful for in developing this and taking the time, being innovative, stepping out of that zone and listening to your customers. And so it was a hit. And so after the bomb, then I came out with the lip scrub and then I came out with other products and that was it. People loved it.
You know, when we look at packaging or products, just by spending a bit more time getting to know your customers, the perceived value. So before I went on and came on here, I already knew about teeth whitening kits and, you know, lip balms. But the amount that you can charge compared to the others, because you did your research, people that are listening here will be very happy with, I don't know the cost of goods, right? I have no idea, but I can guess. And you guys are probably very happy with the profit, you know, return on investment.
Yes, I would think. Yes. So, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So just spending that time and doing it because it looks good. I talked about a model that we did with Dead Sea Mud, and you know, people put it in a plastic container, 16 ounces. We put it in a 4 ounce container, made the container look so much better. And we were able to charge more than the 16 ounce because it was just, it looked that much more appealing and it had that premium look. Same with snow. So it's just, it's perceived at such a high value, although it's a good product. And that's a key. It's a good, it has to be a good product. Mm-hmm. You can package it all you want, but if it's no good, you know, people will get around that facade.
Yes.
Kelsey, are there any questions?
Yeah, we got quite a few coming in right now.
I thought we would.
Yeah, do you want to jump into a couple?
Yes, please.
All right, so... let's see, Usman, what did you focus on that truly made you different? Did you focus on packaging or you innovated the product completely?
To begin with, number one, the product has to be great. Product has to work because the customers is going to be a one-off. Like if it's not good, it's almost like the dropshipping model. If it's not good, people aren't going to continue to buy it. So that lifetime value is not going to be there. The product has to be good. And then innovating in outside of your industry, adding more into the packaging, again, small, affordable steps. But I would say the product, then innovate the product, make it better, improve on it, and then add packaging. And you can add little things. I mean, there's an educational manual. There's a thank you card, little things at the beginning. So it's like, what can I do with the thank you card? It's, again, it feels good. It's matted. This is an educational pamphlet. Let me just make it pretty cute. This is, again, like, how can I tell my customers how to use it? And these are simple things. But then when you want to innovate on the packaging, then you go like, okay, let's invest a little more. Let's, I feel like a magician just coming out with all this stuff, but I'm just such a visual person. And then, so we didn't come out with these for a while, but I wanted, again, a snow. I wanted the experience to be like Christmas every single day of the year. And I managed to do that, but I didn't start off with this. It was just really basic. But then you start, we got the margins, we got a little more money to invest. Then we came out with like really shiny, beautiful packaging. So now you get that experience from the very beginning before you even see the product.
And that's, it really, truly is beautiful packaging. Congrats.
Thank you.
Okay, so from Rad, where are these beauty products made, if you don't mind?
Outsourced, and they are here in the U.S. We just came out with the toothpaste. Everything's done in the U.S. No sulfate, everything, yeah. The toothpaste here and everything else is packaging 100% outsourced.
Does the toothpaste have that peppermint flavor as well?
Yes, it does. And I have it in my sink that I'm trying it out and I think it's sold out. But yeah, I'm really proud of the toothpaste too. And that was a hard one because when you come out with a product that's disrupting the industry and you have to educate the customer on why your product is better. So a little quick for the toothpaste, we're taking out the really bad ingredients that the customer is so used to using. So our toothpaste doesn't have the foamy when you use it, but people are used to that, but people don't know that foam comes from a bad ingredient. So the education process is a long time. And that's the you take with the best product, but also educating the consumer to be a disruptor in your industry.
So that's an interesting question. So interesting comment that you made. So you have to re-educate. How hard is it to open up basically a new niche, you know, with this type of toothpaste? Like, how hard is it to re-educate people?
It is extremely hard, but I think the new norm and the new trend that's coming into it, it's the same as being sustainable. It's the same as eco-friendly. Like, it's going to be more expensive, but the right people and the right customers are going to follow you and respect you and what you stand for. We're going to take a really strong stand and say we stand for only good ingredients, good for you ingredients. And when you take that stand, people should understand, oh, greedy is going to cost me a little more money because in the back end, they're taking that extra time to make whatever I consume. It's good for me. It's really hard. It's really challenging, especially when they're so used to a pattern, a habit. You're coming in, you're taking the Crest toothpaste out of your sink that you've been using for years and your parents. It's almost like breaking a bad habit. Like, it was traumatic for me. It's like, this is a traumatic experience that we have to break from customers. And again, that feeling of like, oh, when I brush my teeth, the toothpaste is foamy. Getting that away from them and then using our toothpaste, and it's the best ingredients, but it doesn't give you that foam. Again, that's a hard concept to break, but video form, every single, you market with that. You market exactly like that. Oh, this is what you can expect when you use our product, and this is why. This is why. So yeah, take that extra time to educate as well.
And I guess also, before we get to any other questions, because you've got premium quality, premium quality, premium quality, before you do anything, you've got to be way above the competitors. It's always got to match that premium brand, snow brand, right? You can't go a notch below. If people don't like it, or if you don't get those 5 stars and you start seeing 4.5, you've got to make it that 5-star, right? Yep. Okay, Kelsey, more questions?
Yes. Okay. Before we do, should we announce the one giveaway?
Sure.
The consulting time. So Brenda, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, so I'm super passionate and I really love what Norm and Kelsey are doing and creating this community. And so one of my giveaways is an hour consulting with anybody, however you want to do it. I want to give an hour of consulting for anybody that wins.
Okay. Awesome. So let's see. So this is only for people that haven't won in the past before. So let's see. Do you have a hashtag?
Yeah, it will make it really simple.
Okay. Is it going to be We Love Snow?
There we go. We Love Snow. There we go. Okay. I wasn't going to say that one, but yeah, there we go.
Okay. So hashtag We Love Snow in the comments. For those people that have not won before, we're only taking new people. We don't want double and triple winners right now because we're getting a couple of those. But yeah, hashtag snow. We love snow.
And imagine this. Okay. So I would pay to have a one-on-one with Brenda. I love branding. I love perception. I love, you know, everything that she's doing. And she has grown this company from 0 to 9 figures. So this consulting is priceless. So whoever wins, congrats.
All right. And for questions.
Can I enter too, Kels?
it's your show. All right. This is from Ryan Rigney. He was a guest actually last week on Monday. Or this week, actually. Would like to hear the breakdown of the influencer strategy, how to work towards getting celebrities on board, and how Snow approached them or worked out your deals. How does that look in the earlier days when you're starting with micros, if you have the time? Thanks. And he's listened to Josh quite a bit, and he wants to hear your perspective on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this could be a whole other episode about influencer marketing and especially how it has changed. And yeah, I would say we were at the very beginning of the influencer trend where you didn't have to do hashtag ad or pay partnership with. And so, yes, absolutely. We were at the front right at the beginning, and our competitor was the best at influencer marketing. So like, how did we end up blowing them out of the water and sticking to influencer marketer? So now looking back at it, I have almost like this pyramid structure of how to work with influencers. The bottom, it's getting as much content as you can through micro influencers. So get that content. Don't really look at the ROI because it's not really going to be there. But there's so many great micro influencers that are even better at video and UGC creation rather than a top influencer that has millions of views that took a selfie with bad lighting, right? So understanding that and going to the brand perception and brand awareness is like, how can I get this everywhere? So I look for influencers that have my customer base and that engagement, and then going up to ambassadors. And the best ambassadors that I look for, it could be the mom blogger in Iowa that has that true, transparent engagement with their followers, that the ROI is going to be through the roof. And that's what I ended up at the very beginning. The trial and error was like, we spend 6 figures on this influencer that we thought had amazing following, but one, the following wasn't our customers, and two, the ROI wasn't there. So then we pivot and we switch, and we found that our mommy blogger we ended up putting her on retainer, and it was like this, she was the best ambassador for us because she was transparent. She was almost like a user. She was that customer that talked to the influencers. So I get micro influencers for content, UGC. YouTube is also very unused because the video is going to stay there. It's SEO friendly. You get that video footage. So micro influencers for content, then you go up the ladder for ambassadors. And another thing that companies don't do is there's a tool that you can go into, add it to Shopify, and you see your influencers, customers that already bought. Like, imagine reaching out to those customers that have a following and that already bought your product and love it. So reaching out to them and turning those loyal customers, knowing that the LTV of those customers, they love coming, they're recurring customers, they love you. How can you turn them into ambassadors already? And then you can structure it from either a free product in exchange. There's a fixed pricing, there's a retainer, there's an ambassador, there's a fixed rate, and then you go up to the celebrities where now you're giving them equity, just like we did with Gronk. They're a partner now, and so they're more than just like a one-off influencer. They're actually a believer of the product, it makes total sense. Again, we went after those influencers that for us is like, we're using a mouth guard. And then we tapped into a market where now it's okay for males to love our product. And there's so many selfies of male guys. It's no, because it's okay for Floyd to use it. It's okay for Gronk to use it. It's okay for Chuck to use it because it makes sense. So working with those influencers that makes sense for your brand. Again, what makes branding is being consistent with who you are and then going after to where your customers are at and who they're already following. So associating yourself with that.
So one of the things you mentioned was an app. Is that the one, I see it in Facebook, or I see it over here. Is it User Gems? Is that what it's called?
Yes, I believe that's what it's called.
Okay, that's great. And, you know, listening to you talk about the micro-influencers, I love working with nano and micro-influencers. And when you start to talk about brand ambassadors, just in case the listeners don't know, you can take those, there's different types of influencers, but the smaller ones, nano and micro influencers, you can easily get to them. But the ideal way of getting to them is converting them, like you said, to a brand ambassador. And that brand ambassador, it's just an influencer that now lives your product. They love your product. They're passionate about your product. They do tons of user content for you. And they're usually under contract, at least anything that we do with brand ambassador, under contract that they have to do so many images. They do get something. They get a percentage off, and they allow you, they transfer over the copyright for you to promote those pictures or videos or content anywhere. It's priceless. If you can do that. It is priceless, which actually I was going to talk about something that you did extremely well. One thing I was saying about lifestyle and social proof, but I want to go back to those testimonials. So you did, it looks like you did a ton of the average person walking along a boardwalk, stopping and just testing out the product, and you get the reaction of the person. Yes. So you must have set up for a day or so and just did it. You've done it, I guess, in multiple locations. But how powerful is that? I mean, that must have done, when you see a real person and you know it's not an actor, do that. I mean, it must have so much impact on your brand.
100%, because it is, you can't like that. It is the most authentic first impression reaction you get from a customer that's never seen your ad, that may not even know who you are. And so it's really transparent for somebody to see, wow, they don't know the brand, they don't know the product, but they tried it and their first impression, just let alone the packaging and the outside, but then they actually tried it and it was all like, 10 out of 10. And so why wouldn't that social proof, why wouldn't you buy after that? And it's something you can't fake. And it was very effective.
Great. Kelsey, any other questions?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So Darwin, Brenda, you gave me an idea. I have a baby brand selling dried grass natural material products. What do you think about introducing a scent for packaging, maybe dried lavender flowers?
Oh, yes. Scent goes a long way. And even if you have multiple products, if they buy one type of product, sending a little, you know, how you go to the store and you scratch and sniff, maybe sending that as an upsell and having like different types of scratch and sniffs of the next product you can buy or different scents that you can send out.
And you're also a fan, I'm putting words in your mouth, but the user experience unpackaging, unveiling the package, right? So you unveil it once, you got the bag, unveil the inner product. So it's like the little gifts. Christmas is, you know, happening two or three times. So it's also the texture. You use soft, velvety type material. Everything that you're doing, it has to do with senses. Is that correct?
Yep. So the look of it, the touch of it, the feel of it, the smell of it. I mean, every single thing. Even down to like, this is embossed, so you could feel it. So it's like, let's go down to the detail of like, okay, it looks amazing. It looks, again, high end, the color of just gold, the perception of gold. But then let's go a step further and do like embossing on it with your logo. So it's on brand, it's very detailed, and you can feel it. So try to hit all the senses there.
Perfect. All right, Kels.
Okay, this is from Israel. For our small chocolate brand, we're spending like $5,000 to $10,000 a month on influencer marketing. So do you have any tips to best monetize the influencer content and reach? This is, what is your favorite platform with it? For our small chocolate brand, we're spending a lot on influencer marketing.
So it's a question, they're spending a lot of influencer marketing, and what is, how do you get the best ROI?
Yeah, I believe so.
Again, how Norm hit it right on the hell is getting that content. I developed the best case study for my best influencers. And so I send that out. It's almost like a brand guideline for my influencers. And it's like, these are the best practices. This is exactly how it has worked. Obviously, cater it to more organic in the way your followers already know you. But this are the best practices. This is some of the points they hit. So making sure, one, the content is there. So you're just not like throwing it off. And the great thing about working with micro influencers is that you can work back and forth with them. Like, all right, hey, this is the video I did. And then you can like give them tips and improvement. And then you send it back before it's even posted. Sometimes you spend six figures on an influencer and they just post it. And he's like, no, it's not right. You didn't talk about the best points and benefits of our product. So the great thing, again, I'm going to go back to the influencer marketing, micro influencers, and working back and forth to get that UGC and then seeing what's working. Again, that UGC is going to go a long way. The natural organic feel, think about how people are scrolling. You have like a millisecond to get their attention. So develop a template of like how you can set up that Facebook ad. Again, social proof, testimonials right away, the unboxing. I do UGC for a lot of my brands that I work with. And one of the ones that works a lot is like me opening the door and the package is on the floor. And then I drop it on the floor and unbox it. There's less barrier to entry now that we have apps like TikTok and Reels, and that you can create this video with spending no money. And so like guiding them, going towards best improvement and the back and forth with micro influencers. And then once you get your case study of what works best, then spending a little more on those higher end influencers, because that's the association again. Once you have the social proof of everybody's using it, you have the content, then you start going up the ladder and spending a little more and seeing your ROI through like, oh, now we get B-list celebrities. Now we're going to get celebrities from the Bachelor in Paradise or like these shows, these B-list celebrities. So then your customers can start slowly associating your brand with those people.
You know, Paul Barron, he's a partner of mine over at Chat Agency. Anyways, his product he built solely on micro and nano influencers. And what he has is it's a product I would never get into, and he doesn't mind me sharing. He has swim diapers. Tough brand, tough thing to get into. It's seasonal and it's tough. He did exactly what you said. He went to mommy bloggers, and all of a sudden he started getting influencers on board. It took 1 month before he started to get the images coming. All of a sudden, they loved the product. Now they're brand ambassadors. He set up a landing page. Mm-hmm. He got them to come over. He, over the last 3 months, on swim diapers, has received 2,000 images. Last month, he asked them, hey, can you show me to do this, whatever the benefit was, because he wanted to put it on Facebook or on Amazon Live. And he asked for a video. He got 30 videos within days.
Oh, wow.
It's incredible what you can do when people really love your product. But I'm going to add to this. You've got to love your brand ambassadors too. If you try to push too hard, or if you've got to respect them. And if they buy into your company's culture, and you have a great company culture like Snow does, oh my gosh, the power of these influencers is incredible.
Yes, yes.
Okay, you got some love for your branded bubble envelopes. People are asking, where do you get them? They are beautiful.
You know, it's really hard to get them, especially just the way they are and the shininess of it. And the again, I wanted bubble wrapper because we have stuff that are like glass. You want to make sure. So a supplier, it's an outsourced supplier, and I can definitely share who it is later. But yeah, if we work together, I can get some.
Yeah. Okay. And one of the other things that I want to get to too, so Kelsey, right after this, you exploded. You went from zero to nine figures. And I know I've built companies in hyper growth. I want to see there's challenges that come up. How did you do it? How did you keep your hair? Mine fell out.
Well, I had a 12-inch hair and I was short, right? No, I'll be completely honest. The reason why I stepped away from Snow, and I'm still a equity partner, but I left last year. And the last thing that really like burned me out was taking this e-commerce brand to retail. And I've never done retail. I've never even taken a product. And so like, I hardly even knew how to develop products on my own. And so like a lot of learning, a lot of figuring out, a lot of trial and error, a lot of spending a lot of money and mistakes and the hyper growth. And it was extremely hard, extremely stressful. And that's why I burned out. I mean, it was to the point where like my physical body couldn't get out of bed because I was handling all these departments, growing teams, working with executives and retailers, and they gave me a package of this big. And I think about trying to build an airplane in the air, and then it's like right on time, I have to like get approved to take off in that lane. And so that's how I felt. I had to read this package. I had to rebrand everything to make it retail friendly. And they were so specific and they're bullies. And it was a nightmare. But I mean, that's my personality. I love challenges. I'm a figure it out type of gal that just gets in the trenches, rolls up her sleeve and say, let's figure it out. When you're in this growth, this is exactly what we asked for, right? We wanted the growth. And it's, I believe that it's such a grateful thing to say my product has been validated by the masses. People are wanting them, begging for them. Being transparent with the customers. I mean, Black Friday, our biggest year, day of the year, we're going to be backed up for a long time. And so sending that transparent, heartfelt message in the email and saying, hey guys, thank you so much for the love. We appreciate you. You're going to have to wait a couple weeks until the product out. But I promise you, we will get your tracking number updated every single time. Here's a picture of the warehouse, and here's 10 buckets of the USPS picking it up. Like being super transparent, thank you for the growth. People will understand. It will go such a long way instead of just like everybody leaves you in the dust. As you're growing, I urge companies to keep that the same small business entrepreneur communication with your customers, even if you get to 100 million, because people will appreciate that and they will be your loyal customers. It's not easy, but this is exactly what we signed up, right? So why step down? Why step down from something that you asked for? And your product is being validated. If you created a great product, I believe that transaction of that value of that customer saying, I believe in your product. I'm trusting you. Here's my money. That money goes to feed families, my employees. Then I'm gonna step it up and then do a great job at delivering.
So I just saw something come in from Simon. What were your major hurdles with hypergrowth?
Inventory. I mean, when you're growing an e-commerce brand, especially delivering that brand, that perception brand, and juggling everything at once. When I talk about elevating your brand, you have to juggle creating that brand consistently everywhere. So the biggest hurdle in growing was it's a cash flow, like the inventory count. I developed such a unique product that has five SKUs in one bundle. So it's you have the travel bag, then you have the insert, then you have the envelope. So keeping track of that supply chain of every single product and making sure they come in hand when maybe we were short of the velvet bags. And so now the product, the three different products that went inside the velvet bag is going to be everywhere. So then that was the biggest challenge, the supply chain of keeping everything right on time. The shipping times, working with suppliers and making sure like they can keep up. So then instead of depending on one supplier, now we have five different suppliers. So then we can get the product on time. Cash flow. I mean, this is an e-commerce brand. And then honestly, as soon as we were the most popular girl in prom, as I would say, saying no to things that hurt. So I believe that what you make as a brand is more than saying no to things because it doesn't align with your brand. So sometimes some partnerships wouldn't work out and they didn't align with who we are. Let's just say, for example, Walmart wanted to work with us and we say no because we want to work with Target, even though the count, the PO was smaller. But again, staying true to who you are as a brand. And then that customer service has to be on point. Customer centric, I believe it's huge. So as you grow, staying true to your customers and your brand.
I want to respect your time. How much time did you allow for this call today?
I'm pretty free. I don't have my next meeting.
Okay, because I'm just noticing, I've got questions. I'm noticing a ton of questions.
Let's go for it.
Kelsey, I'm going to be selfish and I'm going to ask this question. But there's a different business model, different type of cash flow when you're on Amazon or Shopify. When you transition to retail, that's a whole new ball game. How did you get through that? Like you're talking, you could be 90 days out. You could be further out. They could be huge demands. You've got to buy space. How did you come up with that? Did you have to bring in investors? What did you do?
You know, I have to give it to my partner, Josh. He's a great entrepreneur, great salesman, great negotiator, and a great leader in terms of like standing our ground and saying no to a lot of things that doesn't make sense. But then it's almost like not fake it till you make it, but it's like, just like retail, we said yes, and we didn't know how in the back end. I had no idea as a CEO. So I was like, thank you for saying yes to this deal. Now I'm going to figure it out and like stay up till 3 a.m. figuring it out. But that's what it takes. It takes what is this going to elevate your brand, thinking long term. And the hardest thing about going to retail, it's knowing that as a online, we already dominated the online presence and we know we can get sales. We turn on Facebook ads and we say we want this many sales, turn it off, whatever it is. Scale it, whatever. Online, we have a little more control of saying, oh, we want 1,000 SKUs in a minute, let's do it. With retail, we're going to pay you in 90 days and this is going to be your margins. And we want a very curated product. Costco wanted a really nice bundle for this amount of time of the margins. And it's like, it's really hard. It's a hard pill to swallow to know that you can scale online and you have that control. And then you go to retail and say, we're going to start you off with 1,000 SKUs and we'll see how you guys do. And it's like, we can do that in a minute. Like we are in control, but nope, you have to swallow your pride and you have to work with them. And you just have to make it work in order to elevate. So we knew going in that this was a brand play, that this wasn't a distribution play. This wasn't a volume play. This was a brand elevation plan. So going into it and knowing that.
Okay, great. All right. So now that I was selfish, let's go back to everybody else's questions.
And I just want to make a note for everyone watching. If you go and, because we are right now broadcasting from YouTube, LinkedIn, and through Facebook, platforms. So if you go to the Facebook group and ask your questions there on that platform, it makes it a lot easier to get back to you instead of hopping around. Because I know on YouTube in conversations, they'll get lost after the live So if you ask a question on the group, it stays in the group and we can answer back. So always something to keep in mind for the viewers, the great Facebook group is the best way to for us to answer if we ever miss anything. Okay. But yeah, Simon has a question. How many followers should a micro influencer have and how do you measure their engagement?
I wouldn't go based on followers. I would go based on engagement. And then just their authenticity to how they are in how they portray themselves. And again, do they have your customers? Are their customers your type? Is their followings your type of customers? So I do just the number of followers. Is it the number of followers divided by the likes or even the comments? How is the engagement? It could be fake likes and there's like two comments on a 15,000 like post. What's that engagement? So the engagement from comments to likes on the post and then the engagement from likes to following. And then usually I like 3 to 5 is average. There's some that have 10% engagement with like 50,000 followers. So looking at that engagement.
And be careful of fake influencers. There is all sorts of fake influencers and they're pretty easy to spot with their engagement and their one word answers or emojis, just tons of them in their comments. So just be careful of that.
Okay, and this is from Israel. What's a good ambassador program?
No, I can't keep up with these ambassador programs or platforms. There's one new one coming out every month. So I can't answer that. I don't know which one is the trend one now. I grew a team of interns and VAs that do this manually because, again, I like the curated and I like understanding our own template. So they're great guides. The platforms are great guides to understand who's on there, what do they look for, their engagement, their all that I should be asking for. But honestly, I do everything in-house.
Yeah, and we did a podcast recently where I was showing you how to find influencers using different search operators. So I'm not sure which one that is. Maybe, Kelsey, you can post that. But if you want to go in, I mean, there are paid services, but it's free to search and you know, check it out. Like Brenda was saying, you want to make sure that fits your personality. You want to engage with them. You want to get the flow going, comment on them, and then just reach out and do not have the ego. A lot of entrepreneurs have ego. Keep it at the door. Comment and give the follower, the influencer, the ego, you know, great job. Can you, I really appreciate, I've been following for X. And you'll get usually the nano and the micro. It doesn't take a lot to get talking with them. It, when you get to the mid tier, the mega, or the celebrity, now it's much harder to get in contact with them. But what we're talking about right now, just reach out. And there's, I think I gave 5 or 6 different search operators that you can go and find Instagram influencers, Facebook influencers, blog influencers on Google. That's your easiest bet. And that, I think that's what you're saying. You just do it in-house, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. From Rad, is it cost-effective to design the packaging in the USA and manufacture it abroad?
Oh, yeah. Designing the packaging in the US, that's exactly what we did. Again, we have our own designers. We understand what we want to design, what our packaging wants to look like. And then it's cost-effective to just buy bulk and economies of scale through volume to do it outsourcing.
Okay. And we had 2 questions that are kind of similar from Denise and Simon. Both are asking, what was your loss before you turned a profit? And when did you start at zero?
What was the loss before we turned into profit? Starting this company, being a startup and doing everything from the beginning, me and my partner, we're super, super lean and we still are and we haven't taken outside investor. And so again, the quote I keep saying that I love is, what is the next best affordable step to give you that ROI and that profit? Thinking long term. So again, your priorities, the product, then innovating, then the packaging, then the customer experience. So we were always profitable from the beginning. And then what was the other one?
Like when exactly did you start at zero, I guess?
So it was like 2015, 2016. It was idea-based. We went from zero to a million to one to 10, 10 to 2030. So it was a very fast growth pace. So you had to figure out right away if that plane is going to crash. So yeah, that's how it started.
You also, Denise loves your eyebrows. I tried to hold back, but I have to say, Brenda, your eyebrows are everything.
So. Thank you so much. Eyebrows on fleek.
Okay, so we did that one. What advice would you give to a new seller from Bronwyn? And Bronwyn, I did see your We Love Snow. She was at
that. Oh, thank you. Honestly, I'm such an advocate for branding, and it doesn't have to be a high-end product. You look at dollar stores, you know their branding, you know that green logo, it's on there, the tree, right? So I'm a huge advocate for branding. Always be true to your brand. What makes branding? Staying consistent throughout every single touch point at that customer journey, and then enhancing that experience. So if I can give any advice, is build a brand. If you want to stay long term, if you want to flip and be what come out with something and flip it and get out and exit in 2 years, that's not the way to go. So thinking long term, building a brand, being customer centric, and enhancing that customer experience.
When you say customer centric, so many people's impression of that could be so many different things. What do you do differently than the average customer service department?
Oh, I developed the best customer service people, and it was down to, okay, we have a customer that spent $1,000 on our store. I'm going to call them up. I'm going to know, hey, is this fraud or what is it? No. Oh my God, I love your product. It's just, I want to give it out to everybody in my family. So going the extra mile, like really understanding, really, I had a monthly meeting where all we did during those 2 hours is let's go back and see every single review. Let's look at the great reviews and do more of that and use that exact review into our marketing. Let's look at every single bad review. Let's leave our ego on outside of the conference room and let's look at every single bad review, call them up, understand our customers, why, like, let's message them. How can we make it better? Going that extra mile and really training your team to deliver that customer experience. And a lot of things marketers do wrong, they think they're their own customers. No, like, no, no, no. Talk to your customers the way you would like to be spoken to as a customer, not as a media buyer. That's not how you sell. It's so simple, like delivering a message, storytelling, like how do you just convey the pain points and the outcomes and the benefits? So being customer centric is going that extra mile. And even if, like, have set a recurring calendar where you meet with your customers' reps and you go down the reviews and like you call up. It's going to be almost like a war room. Like, all right, we're going to call up this customer and you guys are all going to listen to how we talk to them. There's a customer that's just like really upset. Usually they just want to be listened to. Call them up. Hey, what's your problem? How can we fix it? Wow. People write reviews for two reasons. They're either going to love the product, they're going to like speak about it, or they're going to hate the product and speak about it.
You know, one of the things about leaving the ego at the door, Amazon does this and they do it really well. So I don't know if he developed the letter, but a buddy of mine, Steve Simonson, sent over a letter called the Dear John letter. And it's how Amazon affected you negatively. So it's like writing a letter, you're breaking up with them. And Amazon went one step further with it. They put it in their lunchroom so their employees could read these Dear John letters to show and suggest better ways that they can handle their customers, which I thought was really cool. Okay, Kels.
All right. Or what's been your biggest failure?
Personally or in business? I think...
Let's keep it to business.
Yes.
No, the personal one will be on my I Know This Guy podcast. I got to get you on that.
All right, we'll be on there. The biggest failure, I would say at the beginning, taking way more than we can handle, because then you start lacking in other areas. So we wanted to do it all. And I see this in a lot of entrepreneurs. They want to come out with 15 SKUs. But guess what happens when you diversify your focus and you take on way too much? Even in retailers, there was one year when we took on 3 retailers from scratch. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. So then what happens when you take on way too much? You end up under delivering with what they expected. And so you look bad. And so that's the snowball effect, no pun intended, that then you're coming off as a brand that's, they didn't put the barcode right, or they didn't do this right, then it looks bad. So again, staying consistent, the biggest failure was taking on too much at that growth stage. But it's almost like you just have to figure out. And so what happens, and internally your culture starts like turning into like, oh, we're just this factory and we have to get it done and we have to figure it out. And it's like really stressed. It's like, everybody take a deep breather. This is a lot. This is a marathon. This is a long-term effect. We're in this for 50 years. We can sell it tomorrow, but we're going to do this right. And so making sure that you do everything right. And some things you have to say no to. There are some things we said no to because we were focused on producing the best product with Target, and we wanted to do that right. If you don't do it right the first time, again, your first impression with retailers or with partnerships or with your customers with the first product you come out with, if it's not the first impression, it's not the right one, then you're going to have a wrong impression. Is that what you want for your brand? Think about it.
Good answer.
Okay. We still have more coming in, so we can, depending on time, we can always wrap it up whenever. Let's see. This was just a second. Israel, was Target a brand elevation play?
Absolutely, because we could have gone with Walmart and had a bigger distribution strategy and been in X amount more stores. But if you think about the customer, again, where are your customers shopping? If we were to go with Target and our customer saw a Facebook ad and walked into Walmart and saw our brand, there's a dispositioning of brand perception, because that $150 value that they saw online, now they're seeing at Walmart, and it's just different. The customer is different. The brand perception is different. And if you see the products that are in each store, it makes sense. Harry's is in Target. All these different e-commerce brands, Flamingo. You have to be very strategic with who you go in bed with. It's the same. It's like dating. I always see it as dating. It's like, who do you want to be associated with? Because the human psychology is like, without them even knowing, they're going to associate with you as a more affordable, cheaper brand. So for us, understanding your core values as a brand and who you are, it's like we're affordable, we're attainable, but we're aspirational, and we're that one brand that you just want to have, but maybe you're going to save your little your money and save up to get it. It's almost like the Louis Vuitton, why they have keychains, because any customer can come in and buy that keychain, but they're going to save up to buy a $1,200 purse instead later.
Awesome. And we do have a second giveaway. We can start that up too now. This one, I think we can do some tagging. So Brenda, can you explain the second giveaway too?
Yes. So, I mean, I've been talking about this product forever. So if it is my baby and I love it. So my second giveaway is going to be a teeth whitening kit. And if you don't already have it at home, I would love for you guys to experience everything I've been talking about. So it's going to be and I'll make sure I add the extras as well, but it's going to be a snow kit. Yep. So here it is. give you the whole experience on it. So that would be the second giveaway.
Okay. And is there any, like, is it US only?
US only.
US only. Okay, good. So if you're from the US and you'd like the giveaway, please take two people. And yeah, we'll go into a second draw afterwards. And yeah, we are an hour and 10 minutes in. So maybe just one more question. If that's
So, and one other thing too, Kels. Yeah. So just let's explain about tagging. In case you don't know how to tag, you could just mention.
Add symbol.
Yeah.
Add symbol and then write a name.
Yeah.
So just two people and you'll be entered. Just
all right. I see them coming in now.
Just like this.
Just like that.
Okay, great. Okay, so our last question, as we wait for everything to come in, from Hone, Shopify versus Amazon, which one do you generate more revenue from? Or is it, do you have a favorite platform?
For us is clearly Shopify. I love Amazon, and what I also encourage everybody is to diversify and be an omni-channel and building that brand. But one of my biggest things as well, it's never built on rented land. If you are on that brand building long-term goal, it's great to have everything. Amazon is a cute little cherry on top for us, and we love it. But we own the customers. We're on Shopify, and we're building a brand. So,
okay. So while we're waiting for these results to come in, is there any step by step, step one, step two, step three, that you can give advice to Amazon or e-commerce sellers? Do this, then this, then this.
You know what? I hate to be a record, keep saying this, but build hero product, have the best product out there. Become so obsessive in having a great product that people are going to refer you and talk about nonstop. Then if you want to build a brand, I'll make it really simple. If you want to build a brand, I came out with this brand branding framework with four pillars. So one is building that brand equity. How can you get so deep in your brand equity by having IP, intellectual property, having a great domain, going after those very strong extra stuff that's going to build your brand equity, your perception, and that also entails the packaging, delivering that experience. So brand equity, association. Association goes with awards, with being on magazines, with PR, with influencer marketing. Who are you associating yourself with? Who are you partnering up with? So that's the second one. The third one is going to be community. How can you build a strong community, a strong following, that cult following, that loyal customer? And then the last one would be diversification. How can you build those moats around your castle, aka your brand, and really and diversify your efforts. Again, not making yourself super thin, but again, building those strong moats around you. So any competitor, any lawsuits that come in, they won't be able to touch you.
So let's make sure we get those four pillars in the group, Kels. That's really great.
Yep. Brand equity, association, community, and diversification will give that long-term brand perception and brand elevation.
Perfect. Okay, so I think it's that time, Brenda. It's time for the Wheel of Kelsey.
All right. Okay, so we got a couple here. So we got two wheels this time. I'll share the first one. Just a second. I believe it's one. And then we got a second one. Oops, I just...
Should we put the Jeopardy theme on while we're doing
this? I think so. I'm just trying to find the right one. Sorry, I'm jumping around here.
Okay. You're not going to get your Christmas bonus this year.
Okay. Here we go. Okay. So this is for the 1 hour consultation. Yep. So if you guys are ready, we'll do the countdown. 3, 2, 1. Okay, Simon is a winner.
All right.
All right. Congratulations, Simon.
That's a great package.
So that's for the hour consultation. Okay. And then the second one, if you can just give me a second, if you guys can round out the show and then.
Okay. All right. So is there anything else that you'd like to add while Kelsey's adding everybody to the wheel?
Yeah, you know what? I'm all about personal development into spirituality. So I just want to say, as you're building this, it's going to be really hard. And always understand your why. This is long term. Understand your why you're doing this. Little exercise I like to give the group coaching is write your entrepreneur oath, your vows. Like, I vow that to stay in this long term if it gets hard. For the days that I don't want to get out of bed, for the days that I want to look at my emails, that's 1,000+. For those days that I want to give up, I'm going to look at my oath. I'm going to sign it and say, this is why I'm doing it. If it's for your family, if it's for your freedom, just understand your why, because you can get really lost while you're growing a company.
I just thought of a question. So you had this really successful, you still do, your equity in the, you have equity in it. When you left, I've experienced this, but when you left a company that you built from zero to 100 million, did you get depressed?
Oh, absolutely. It was like I lost a part of me. It was especially because it was by choice. When I had to finally choose something for myself and be selfish, that guilt creeps up, that wanting to like, oh, why do I do, I did this for myself, but I got depressed, and it's been a really long journey trying to get that motivation back up and saying that it was the best choice for myself.
So curious, how did you get out of it?
How did I get out of it?
Yeah, you know, it's a long journey.
So how did I step out?
Yeah.
So
sorry, maybe I misphrased that. How did you get past the depression to move forward and start going again?
It was through helping others. It was what ignited that fire in the belly that was turned off when I left and didn't want to do anything. And it's like, how did you walk away from the successful company? The customers need you, the employees need you, and they're still reaching out, like, come back. It's like, how did I get that back? It was through helping other entrepreneurs. And that just lit me up over again. Like, hey, I come in and like, I remember when Snow was at year two and you're having trouble talking to suppliers and the shippings and all this, like, let me help you. And so just helping other entrepreneurs really fulfills that in me.
And how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, so my email, and I'm really active on social, mostly on Instagram, and I give so much value. I love unboxing. I love auditing brands, and so you can get a lot of value out of me if you just follow me. But my Instagram is RubyEcom, R-U-B-Y, Ecom, and then Facebook, I'm sure I'll be tagged here. And then my email is info@rubyvc.com, and so I love to chat, I love to give value, and if anything, if I can consult you. So I'm doing it on my own terms now. This time around, I'm just consulting before I take another plunge into burnout, which I'm not in no rush to do, and I'm doing it differently. I learned so much from my last experience. So right now I'm just casually consulting.
Great. And you are an active member in our group, which is great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Always loving brand experts in our group. Okay, Kelsey, you're almost done there.
Yep. Yeah, we're done. So I added the people that have never won before. So we got three people. Here we go. This will be a lot easier. Okay. So these three, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Okay.
Oh, there we go.
All right. Good. So I'll go get you the information you need from them, Brenda. And yeah, I'll email you everything.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think that wraps up today. Thank you for both of the giveaways. That's fantastic, Brenda. We've got to have you back. And I already know the topic, influencer marketing. How about that?
That's the next one. Yeah, we're on the same page. I think we understand that beast.
Okay, beautiful. So thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. Can't wait till you come on again. We've had great engagement here. I think we have a bunch of questions that we still got to answer, but thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, guys. Again, thank you for allowing this platform and for us to share knowledge. And thank you, everybody who showed up.
All right. So that's it for today, everybody. It went extra long, but it was worth it. I tell you, Brenda is an incredible marketer and she knows what she's talking about. So I loved having her on. Hopefully we can get her on real soon. If you're looking to get more information, again, go to Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy, and check out the whole episodes there, as well as other content and highlights. If you want to see the video, go to YouTube at Norm Farrar and you'll be able to see the whole episodes plus a ton of content that Kelsey's put up. And speaking of Kelsey, where are you, sir?
Hello. Yes. Thank you everyone for tuning in. We got a huge turnout. Everyone loves Brenda here. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Bronwyn, Usman, Hone. Yeah, it's been a pleasure this episode. I think everyone can say that they've learned a ton. So if you're new to the podcast and you're catching the tail end of this, you can find the whole episode on YouTube. Just search Lunch with Norm, Norman Farrar, and it'll pop up. We have a YouTube channel there. And yeah, you can find everything. And if you haven't yet, please like and share this video and join our Facebook group. We're, I think, hitting that 300 mark today, which is awesome. We've got lots of great comments and insights and experts like Brenda. We have Ryan Rigney.
And Ryan was actually listening today, so that was kind of cool.
And he was asking his questions too, which is awesome to see. So it looks like hopefully everyone's learning something new, which is always a good thing to see. And yeah, that's it for me.
Okay, so we're going to start Monday off with a bang. I've got a buddy of mine who is... man, this guy is cool. His name's Tomer Rabinovich. A lot of us have already heard of him. If you haven't heard of him, wait till you hear him. He knows his stuff, inside and out, Amazon listing, sourcing, you name it. And he always comes with a ton. I've had him out to my live events. He's come out to Greece with me and we've talked. I've been to his event in Israel twice. He doesn't let me go anymore. anyways, Tomer is an inspiration. He does so much for the Amazon and e-com world. So tune in on Monday. I'm not overhyping it. You'll love it. And I think that's it for me. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at noon Eastern Central Time, Central Eastern Standard Time. And thank you for watching and enjoy your day. Lunch with the